Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order this conference committee on Senate File 2995. We're glad to see everyone here this morning. We do have kind of a brief opportunity to talk about what is in the conference committee report today. We wish we had more time because this is honestly, this is a great bill. It's got many, many things in it. It comes in at 843 pages, which I have to say is not probably the largest HHS bill that we've done. But it's not the number of pages, but really the number of lives that are going to be transformed by this bill that is really important. So first of all, I know that everyone here in the room probably understands, but for those who may be listening, I do want to just say that our staff have probably worked around the clock to get this bill together, to get this conference report prepared for today. It is a huge, huge task. I just want to thank all of them, especially the folks who are not in the room that work in the revisor's office, who have really worked so hard to get this together. This conference report from the House side is the work of two separate committees, and I want to acknowledge Chair Pinto has, so we're really both chairs on the House side for this bill, and then Senator Wicklund has carried the burden of having both of those things on the Senate side. So it's been quite the work of the of this session to get through all of this, and so I think it's so important just to acknowledge everyone's tremendous effort to actually have this conference report prepared and in front of us today, and such a great conference report, I believe it is. So we do have a brief time to talk about what is in the bill, and frankly, it's really hard to structure that conversation because there is so much. So I thought what I would do is just mention some of the highlights of the bill, and then ask some of the members of the conference committee have provisions in the bill and things that they want to highlight that are in the bill, and so we'll give them an opportunity to do that as well. And then, of course, we can take questions. We have staff here to help us. Members can answer questions. Staff can answer questions if we have questions from the committee as well. So this bill, one of the very important things I think that it does is it extends eligibility for Minnesota Care to undocumented Minnesotans. This is really transformative. It includes continuous eligibility under medical assistance coverage for children. So that will, we think, improve coverage, reduce churn for children who are covered by medical assistance. It eliminates cost sharing in medical assistance so that people will actually get more care and not be deterred from getting care. We could actually kind of flip through the bill a little bit. So even just starting in Article 1, we have some expansions of coverage under MA, including tobacco and nicotine cessation, adult dental benefit set, which is going back to its full coverage that was cut years ago during a downturn in the economy when we had a deficit. We have modifications of MA coverage to cover contraceptives, which is something the House accepted from the Senate. Value-based drug purchasing to hopefully get better value in our drug purchasing for the state. Coverage for seizure detection devices, biomarker testing, recuperative care. We have better access to coverage and payment for diagnosis, monitoring, and treatment of rare diseases. And that, eliminating co-payments for services after a mammogram, which many things where the co-payments are eliminated in medical assistance because we're just eliminating them across the board. We have a rate increase for mental health services in the bill. And that is just Article 1. So, and that's just a few of the items in Article 1. I guess I could pause here and see if members want to talk about any of that or anything else that I just covered. I can just go on and list a few other things. Maybe I should do that because the things are kind of all through the bill, as you may imagine. So we also have, as many of you know, the No Surprises Act passed on the federal level. This is to eliminate the surprise billing that many patients were experiencing, and we have money in the bill to help that be enforced here in the state. The Senate had a provision requiring disclosure of facility fees for telehealth, which we accepted from the Senate. We have improved network adequacy provisions in the bill to make sure that coverage really gives people better access to real health care. We have, I mentioned some of those. Some things are kind of in a couple different places because of the way the funding works. Moving to Article 3, we accepted from the Senate the provision that gives adult adoptees access to their birth records, something that's been kicking around this legislature for about 10 years and finally will be resolved. We are creating a tobacco use prevention account, and that is because we just received word of a settlement with Juul regarding vaping, and there will be some money coming in from that settlement. We are capturing that money to be actually used for tobacco prevention activities. So that will be a good thing. As many know, the last time we had a big settlement with tobacco, much of it went into the general fund and didn't really get used for its intended purpose. There is provisions in the bill from the Department of Health that they're going to start doing more around drug overdoses and do more prevention and start more of a public health approach to that. There are many equity provisions in the bill, including at the Department of Health, a new Office of African American Health, and a new Office of American Indian Health, and just many provisions throughout the bill to advance equity and make sure that we reduce those disparities that we talk about all the time and that are so troubling. We have much in the bill around healthcare workforce with all kinds of provisions to increase diversity in our healthcare workforce, including our mental health workforce. We're very proud of those. There are provisions in the bill to have hospitals screen patients for eligibility for coverage, very importantly, to really stop some of the really abusive going after patients to collect medical debt when they should have been eligible for a program or for charity care. We have a provision at the Department of Health to start to look into the impacts of long COVID, which we know is so important. We have the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, which is funded with the fees that many were really interested in having, similar to our 911, how that is funded. A new program, Healthy Beginnings, Healthy Family, to improve pregnancy and infant health and well-being. So these are just a few of the provisions, and you could see I could probably use up our whole time here just reading through them, and I'm not going to do that, but I will see if Senator Wicklund would like to talk about anything in particular, or we can go to other members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just say I agree. This is just, a great bill. I think we have comprehensively addressed many different aspects in the healthcare area, public health, and then very exciting to me what we're doing to address children and families in the state. And I just am so excited that we are able to move forward in addressing funding more substantially our childcare area and supporting families, especially those with the youngest, our youngest children. I guess in terms of highlights, I think you've talked about a number of the things that are very much highlights for me. I think in the areas, excuse me, of mental health, public health, you know, the healthcare workforce. We have programs for developing apprenticeships, expanding healthcare workforce grants. There's workplace safety grants for healthcare entities. And then certainly there's an extensive list of items related to childcare access and the workforce. And maybe Chair Pinto, if you would want to highlight some more of those, that would be great too.
Thank you. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Wicklund, thank you so much for your leadership. It's been, I'm so glad with the product that, that we're coming out with on the children and family side, and Chair Liebling, thanks for the opportunity to partner with you in putting this together. As I think we could see as Chair Liebling was walking through just a few provisions, there's so much that's so good in here, and I guess what I want to just highlight kind of stepping back is the difference that this budget will make for vulnerable kids and families in our state and getting so many more kids off to the great start that they deserve. And I'm excited as we're looking at that. And I know that on Friday we went through the spreadsheet, and so we've had a few days that folks have to process and think this through. And I hope that that was clear as we walked through that, what a difference that this will make. And what I'm excited about in particular is kind of the infrastructure around that work. So there's a whole bunch of reforms that we're putting in to make our systems work better to support kids and families. And that's true in all kinds of ways, whether it's has to do with the six-month budgeting for MFIP. It has to do with the new agency that we're moving forward with. It has to do with the Great Start compensation supports, making sure that we recognize that child care and early learning is, in fact, a public good, deserving of public support. And so there's a whole bunch of other things as well. As I say, we kind of walked through this on Friday. But I'm especially – I've been excited as I've been looking over that spreadsheet kind of over and over again over the weekend, just seeing what a difference we're going to make, and look forward to continuing the discussion about that and then seeing the impact that we have. I should note that the Vice Chair on the Children and Families side, Representative Keeler, has focused on a number of areas in particular, and I'll be eager to hear from her on some of that as well, with your permission, Madam Chair.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, so coming into this work, we always had the understanding that we can do all of these things if we have a strong foundation, and a strong foundation in a lot of our minds have been food and housing. And so the big parts in this bill that I'm really excited about is that when we often sit at a lot of these tables outside of just children and family, whether it's healthcare, education, public safety, it always falls back on, like, where did you sleep and what have you had to eat? And we really took it upon ourselves to make mass investments in a really braided approach that's guided with the long-term goal of family preservation, making investments in our Indian Child Welfare Act and making sure our tribes have the money to do what that is, because as many of you know, this state passed MIFBA in the middle of the session, extremely bipartisan. But around the food insecurities, we're getting creative and making sure that greater Minnesota has access to it. As many of you also remember, in the middle of the session, we had to do a $5 million emergency food shelter funding because that's our food shelves were losing the opportunity to provide what is guaranteed in statute to our communities. So investing in that is really important. And lastly, I'm taking a lot of pride in the work that we did around the Pathway Home Act and making sure that we have shelter capital so that we can build the brick and mortar border to border, but then also have the wraparound services that can particularly impact our youth and vulnerable populations, but also our sexually exploited individuals across the state. And so we take a lot of pride in that. And this bill has taken a lot of work, a lot of passion, and we've heard a lot of stories from the community. And so we're really proud of that work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a great bill. I'm very excited to vote for it. I just want to extend my thanks to both the chairs and my House colleagues, and especially staff, as well as was mentioned. There is a great deal of work that has gone into this bill over a relatively short period of time, and so that is a big lift. So thanks to everyone's work. I, too, am thinking about the impact this will have on families across our state, in every corner of our state, in big ways, around the very basic needs of health care and child care and getting our littles off to a good start, food and shelter, as Rep. Keeler talked about. So very fundamental ways this is going to make a real and significant difference in the lives of Minnesotans. A couple of things I would highlight is raising the CCAP rate to the 75th percentile. That is work that has been happening for a number of years. I'm incredibly excited that we will get it done in this bill. It will make a difference for families across the state. Those child care retention grants are the Great Start grants, recognizing that child care and early learning is a foundational part of the public good and what we want for our kiddos, to get them off to a great start, and that benefits all of us. And coverage of our undocumented neighbors, all of our undocumented neighbors, is huge and transformational and will absolutely save lives. We know healthcare is a human right, and this puts that, shines a light on that, making sure that everyone can have access to that care. And the last thing I would highlight among, there's many, many other things that I won't talk about all of them, is the study to look at the Minnesota Health Plan or universal coverage, again, that being that healthcare is a human right, and we know that we, we all do better when we all have access to healthcare. And so really, what would that system look like? We have a system right now that, is not meeting the needs and is largely based on profits, and that shouldn't be the case when we're talking about healthcare. And so really looking at what would a system look like that really is focused on care for everyone is huge. And so I'm very excited for that to move forward so we can really start transforming our healthcare system to one that really is focused around care for everyone. So thank you for all of the work, and very excited to vote for this bill.
Thank you, Senator Bolden. Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try not to be too redundant. There is a lot of great stuff in this bill. I also am very excited and proud to vote for it. I want to thank chairs and the staff who are incredible and have worked with their teams to make this happen. I don't want to be too redundant, but I do want to try to grab a couple of things that haven't been mentioned yet. I think we did mention recuperative care, which is so important to help decrease readmissions and to help people who don't have shelter who are recovering from illness or surgery. Improving the diagnosis and the access to diagnosis and treatment of rare diseases is a hugely important effort in our state. Increasing reimbursement rates for reproductive health care and doula services. Doula services have been shown to improve pregnancy outcomes and decrease our obstetric maternal infant mortality disparities here in Minnesota. Adding coverage for long-acting reversible contraceptives when people are still in the hospital after having a baby is hugely important for equity. Increasing rates for mental health services. We all know we have a mental health crisis. That's a key part of addressing that crisis. Developing a provider order for life-sustaining treatment will help people get better care and receive the care that they desire as they approach the end of life. Family planning grants are really important as we look at what's happening to access to reproductive health care across the country. Minnesota, it has been a bit of an island and will only be more so as states across the country are decreasing or eliminating access to abortion care. The Psychedelic Medicine Task Force, I'm very excited as part of this bill. This is a really interesting and innovative potential new treatment for depression and other diseases, so studying that will be important, again, as we address our mental health crisis. And then also creating a task force on pregnancy and substance use disorder. We have an opioid crisis in this country, disproportionately harming pregnant people, and this will help us to treat people appropriately as we finally accept that addiction is a disease and should be treated as such rather than a crime. So I could go on and on, but I think this bill really is a part of our broader effort to make Minnesota the best place to live, work, and raise a family. And so I'm very proud of it, and I want to thank the chairs for.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Kupek?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Most of really the work I think I've done in Health and Human Services has been focused around the child care side of things. And in greater Minnesota, child care is is even a bigger problem than it is in the metropolitan area. It's a workforce issue. We hear that all the time, that it is the number one issue among the workforce is finding affordable child care. And we have made a huge step forward with this bill in doing that. I got a message yesterday from one of my child care providers who said, I'm thankful that we are finally being heard. So this is doing really a lot of good in the child care area. I want to just focus in on one really small thing, but that's kind of near and dear to me, is for hearing aid insurance. When I was out on the campaign trail, I was up at a farmstead, and this couple came out, and their daughter is 18, and hearing aid insurance only goes up till the age of 18. And she was going off to college, and they were really worried about what was going to happen to their daughter as they went off. And this bill, Senator Bolden had a bill that's included in here that will provide insurance coverage for everybody who needs hearing aids. And that's one of those ones that I feel like I'm going to go back. I've already contacted them, but I can go back and tell them, you know, we heard you, you got stuff done. And that will just, there's one family that's just going to get a lot of relief. That's just one little small thing out of this very big bill. So thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I too just want to thank the chairs for the work and the staff, the amazing staff. And this bill, I think the focus of this bill is on expanding access for Minnesotans and lowering the barriers to preventative care. The chair started off with mentioning a lot of the MA coverages that we have, and that dental benefit set is extremely important, and it builds on the work we did last term when we put back in the periodontal care. So, you know, this access and the preventative care measures in this bill are fantastic, and HHS is a daunting task, and, you know, our work is never done, and there's always more to do, but I think we're making big strides in here in the area of mental health as well. And that continuum of mental health that we continue to build these services. You mentioned some of those items already, the 988 Suicide Crisis Lifeline, the mobile health crisis grants, additional funding for school-linked mental health services, and psychiatric residential treatment facility grants, I think, are really important in this as we move forward. One other thing that I want to mention are school-based health centers, which we've been working on for a while too. This is something that started in Minnesota and it moved across the country, and it hasn't grown as much as it could here in Minnesota, and it has great potential across the state, rural and urban areas, getting access to care for our kids. And so I'm really excited about that one as well. And lastly, just the amount of studies that are in this bill, the actuarial study for Minnesota care, and the studies that will look at our health system in its totality and what we can do in the future. And I think gathering that information, discussing it in committee, is going to be very helpful as we go forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And so, Senator Abler.
Well, I just I have some questions, but I think if Representative Schumacher wants to go first, he doesn't want to go first. All right. Okay. Madam Chair, I have some questions.
That would be fine.
and I, you know, there's, I mean, a lot to like in this bill, the child care and the biomarkers and the rare diseases and all that, and maybe it's a great bill. I'm concerned about that the hospitals don't have any increases in their rates, and I don't think that a 3% rate increase for mental health is going to draw anybody to services, especially as we open up the market to more. I'm concerned about that. Madam Chair, do you know offhand how many undocumented people are going to be added into this? It's like 50,000, or I don't even know the number. Just a ballpark is fine.
I don't.
How many undocumented people?
Senator Wicklund.
Madam Chair, Senator Abler, it's about 40,000 people, the estimate right 40, now.
All right. Yeah, so I'll just offer the thought that you're adding 40,000 people to the Minnesota care system, and the hospitals are going to have to take care of them at below cost rates. I'm nervous about that. Madam Chair, could you comment on anything that was neither in the House nor the Senate that's now part of this conference report, or were there nothing that was added that's new?
Well, Senator Abler, there are things that are were worked on and changed that are in here. I think there may be small items that were added. I don't have a list of those, but I do want to comment on something that you just said, however. You know, when people living in the state, whether they have documents or not, still get sick.
Madam Chair, I didn't say I was opposed to it. I just
no,
said the
well,
pressure
I'm just,
on the system
I'm just responding. Senator Abler, I have the floor. So people still get sick and they still go to hospitals. And if they don't have coverage, it ends up that the hospital often will have to provide charity care. And when they don't have coverage, they get to the hospital sicker than they otherwise would. And so the coverage for undocumented Minnesotans is broadly supported by the medical community. And so this, contrary to what you just implied, that this is somehow an extra burden for our medical system, I think many of our providers view this as a benefit because when people show up, they will have coverage. Now, it isn't probably the same rate as private coverage, but they have coverage. And they can get preventative care. And if they have diabetes, they can get management for their diabetes so that they don't end up in the emergency room in a crisis condition. So we've got providers here. We've got a nurse and a physician here on our conference committee who could probably speak to that much better than I could. But I don't think that's viewed as a detriment. I think it's a benefit. And, you know, what I've heard throughout my entire legislative career is that charity care is a burden for hospitals. And so I think this is an improvement for them, actually. So, Senator.
Well, fair enough. Thank you. I appreciate the discussion. And, you know, I'm going to spend almost no time suggesting we could have had more time to talk about this, these very things, in a public forum so we could all understand it better. So actually a hospital could come up and testify like, no, we're good. And I know that in the alley, in the hallways, if we would have gone to the Minnesota Care buy-in, that it would have had an impact, quite an impact on HCMC and other places as they have people that were paying a higher rate working for a lower rate. So that's good. I didn't come to belabor that point. I just do have some questions. Can you tell me is there any increase in the rates for the EIDBI programs in this or any grants or anything to help that out?
So, Senator Abler, my understanding is that that was increased in the Human Services bill, and I still
right, it was, but there's nothing else in here, none of that 3% or anything.
So, I think maybe Senator Wickman, if she's prepared to talk more about what is within that rate, but I do want to say, though, that there's a rate study going on for the mental health rates, and so this is not, no one should think that what's in this bill is like once and done. This is just an interim step because we know the need is there. And so, you know, when we get the rate study completed, I think obviously there will be more consideration of raising rates and we'll have a better understanding of what we need to do because in this group of providers, there were different kinds of services. And so part of what we got to here was we pulled out EIDBI because it was getting a rate increase elsewhere. I think we pulled out the SUD providers because they had gotten rate increases, although we recognize it probably isn't enough. But nevertheless, we didn't treat it as just one bucket. And Senator Wickland, if you want to comment on it further.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Senator Blair, as was mentioned, the EIDBI increases are in the Human Services bill, and there's about a 14.99% right. increase in there. Also, I'd point out that, you know, maybe 3% doesn't sound like it should, you know, it's going to have an impact. I would say that we looked at rate increases higher than that, but we also had to look at what we could actually manage in this budget. I think that the 3% increase is a good start, and it also has an inflation factor that will be included in beginning. So I think that not only providers will not only see a benefit to an increase, but they'll also be able to look forward to additional inflationary increases over time. And we specifically did not include just areas that were getting increases in other places. So that's the only reason we carve things out.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair.
Representative Abel.
Well, that's helpful. I mean, just I'm trying to keep my frustration about the like total fog on this bill, and it came out at 12:30 or something. I got up at 6 and started reading it, and anyway, just it's. I'm trying to keep that out of my questions. My questions are trying just to be questions, and so I can clarify. So I'll just make an effort to just charge on there. There was a task force for background study disqualifications and all that. Is that in this bill, the results of that task force?
Senator Wicklund.
Madam Chair, Senator Abler, there are some of the recommendations that were brought forward by the background studies task force are included in here, along with some of the other work that DHS had brought forward as governor's proposals. So yes, some of them are not every recommendation, but some of the key ones that were brought forward. We heard the bill from Senator Champion and in our committee, and those recommendations are the kinds of things that are included in the bill.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Senator Abel.
Well, I mean, so kinds of things. I mean, what if you're one of those people on the bubble that's not included? Is there some way to know? Is there a comparison with what the Senate had that we know of, that I know about, and then what got kicked up? Can somebody provide that before we get to the floor, please? That would be very helpful. So I'll just leave that as a question, and it's a fair question to ask, because a lot of these decisions are made between the two of you. And I know the game. I've been in those rooms, and I know exactly how it goes. And so some of the people that are trying to go back to work in a workforce crisis are desperate for those changes to come. So if that could be provided to me, I would be grateful. I have some more questions, Madam Chair.
Okay, and Senator Abler, I suspect maybe someone from DHS might be able to help you with that question. I don't know if we have any sort of written comparison on that, but I'm sure that there are folks here who'd be glad to talk with you about that. Offline. So, Senator
Abler,
go ahead.
I believe that it's true that the new agency is funded below the recommended level. Is that correct? And is that a number that DHS signed on by?
I'm sorry, could you say?
The new agency.
Whatever okay,
it's called.
Maybe Chair Pinto.
Is that funded fully or is that not funded fully?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Abler, first just to answer a prior question, I'm not aware of anything on the Children and Families side that is new that wasn't either in the House or Senate bill or both. Just answer that. Yes, the new agency is funded at the level that was requested by the administration.
Okay. That's all
so, yes.
As that came in. And Madam Chair, I appreciate that. I do have a specific question on page 670, if you can believe I have a question on the words.
I'm sorry, repeat the number?
Lines, page 670.
670, okay.
Which is overnight supervision. In the other conference committee, I think this is the same section we worked on. And is this the identical language that was worked out with the department? Or is this a whole different topic that I'm just not knowing? But I think this is the overnight supervision section. And there was some wordsmithing that we did right at the very end. Does this pick up that wordsmithing, Madam Chair?
Maybe Madam that would Chair. Be for Senator Wicklund.
Well, Mr. Burdick is here. We did have a discussion yesterday about the fact that there were some wording changes that they requested.
If you just tell me it's picked up, that's all I need to know. So it's
Mr. Burdick.
Morning.
Mr. Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. Senator Abler, to your question, there was a kind of error in processing after the committee hearing on the Human Services bill. And so the language that you see here reflects the agreed to language between the department and the providers.
Thank you very much.
Senator Abler.
Well, that's good to know. Is this the big deal? Is this like the last thing we did in the last 20 minutes or something? So just thanks. And I have a couple more questions. I want to express a thought. This birth record thing, I think it was in our bill, that a person that's signed a form to be non-disclosed is now going to be disclosed. I'm not winning that argument, Madam Chair, but I just think it's unfair to somebody. I know the topic. I've been lobbied on it for a decade. One of my best friends wants me to stop saying these things. But people that don't disclose who they are don't disclose for some reason. And I believe in privacy and people's rights to be private. And so that's in here, and actually it blows up the whole thing. Anyway, so I'm just disappointed about that. There's no need to comment on it, but I have a question on line 682.25, the low value care part, which was a house proposal. And I think Representative Lee Lang, this is one of your proposals. Somewhere is low value care. Maybe 682.25, if that's where I wrote down. Oh yeah, low value. That's that section on page 682. And I just want to offer a concern. And it's in the bill, so I mean, here we go. But I just want to offer a caveat, Madam Chair. Even though some things are low value in terms of, you know, population benefit, some of those low value things might be what saves your son's life. And it's low value to the system. And Oregon tried this, they had a list. And I'm concerned what this might lead to. And I think that particularly while we're opening up more care to more people, you want to make sure you can get the care that you need based upon what your doctor says, not what some insurance company is going to say. I'm sorry, that's a low value care. You're too old. It's too low of a value to keep in our plan. And so I'm sorry about your cancer intervention. Sorry about whatever it is that we're not going to do because it's low value. So I know that's not your intent, but I just see it as a risk as we look at that. Having, Madam Chair, you know, I've been here for a long time talking about this very thing. Do you want to offer a comment, please? Or would you mind?
Yeah, well, Senator Abler, I guess what I would say is that this has been an ongoing concern and effort for many, many years. And so this isn't something we've sort of just now invented. And the provision you're talking about just says the commissioner shall develop recommendations for strategies to reduce the volume and growth of administrative spending and the magnitude of low-value care. So I don't think there's anything wrong. I hear your point. There can be disagreement about what is low value, but I don't think there's any harm in having this as part of what is being examined. And as we look at how do we control costs and get people the care they need. And I know we all agree about that is something we need to do. Costs in healthcare are growing very quickly. And we all want people to get the care they need and not to go broke getting it. So, there's no magic solution in healthcare. We all know that, right? So we just have to try. And, you know, maybe this would be a moment, too, for me to explain. Well, I'll let you finish your questions, and then I will sort of explain our direction on this generally, which Senator Bolden began that discussion, but I think maybe we should put a little more emphesis on it. But back to you, Senator.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. And I just want to, I'm sounding my own concern. Early in the process, here come the recommendations, and here's a way to save some money. This came up in Colorado in the discussions we had before. Governor Lamb at the time there was some $500,000 a year insulin kits, and he was not interested in spending that kind of money. And so what if your kid is one of those? And so I would spend $500,000, Madam Chair. And we chip in. Some people are sick. Some people aren't. It's not their fault they had a bad insulin thing going. And they needed something just so unique to help them live. So that will not surprise you. So, Madam Chair, to that vein, I have some questions about some other elements of the bill. And I just have to say that I'm sorry that you put such a lot of Senate File 70 into this. We have seen a number of things coming from the in the conference reports from the House that did not or could not pass the Senate floor. And they put them into an 843-page, must-pass, $3.5 billion bill, and here we go. I'm trying to avoid saying the word I'm offended, but I'm just hurt. It just inside. You're not hurting my feelings. I don't care about it. We've been here so long, Madam Chair. We have no feelings anymore. But I'm just kind of soul crushed.
I still do, Senator Abler.
I'm glad I got you to laugh. Can you answer just a couple questions for me? So on page 29.3, I think it is, what is a medically necessary abortion? That language was changed, and we didn't hear this, I don't think, in the House. So just, we talked about the health of the mother, that whole debate, including mental health, et cetera, but I was just curious, if that's the right thing. Yeah, it's on page 29.3. So I just, if you can help me understand what medical necessary is, because you're redefining all that, you're taking away the sexual conduct one and all that. And so maybe, just can you offer an opinion on that?
Yeah, I certainly can, Senator. So under MA, all services that are covered, this is about coverage under MA, and as everybody knows, MA has covered abortion services in this state for a very long time, since Doe v. Gomez, I believe. Yeah. So, we will continue to cover abortion services. And so this is really just a change in terminology, because under MA, services have to be medically necessary to be covered. My view is medically necessary is whatever the physician's opinion or the provider's opinion makes it medically necessary. I mean, physicians determine this all the time. So I don't know if Senator Morrison would want to weigh in here, but, you know, on that score, this was in the file that I carried, House File 91, which was the abortion repealers. It also was in Senate File 70, which was carried by Senator McQuaid. Anyway, Senator Morrison, if you care to comment on it, that would be great.
Sure, Madam Chair. You know, I think this really, to me, this just sort of cleans up language and makes it, one of the challenges that we've seen in legislating reproductive health care services and abortion care specifically is trying to kind of to find these very narrow and non-medical pathways for when abortion is necessary. And so I think that this, one of the things that we've seen across the country since that there's been this massive expansion of limiting access to abortion care is there are a lot of states that have passed laws that, for example, abortion only for saving the life of the mother. And people have run into very dangerous circumstances where how would you define when the mother's life is at risk and in danger? And one of the things that's very challenging with obstetric and gynecologic care is that is a very slippery slope, and waiting until someone is about to die usually will mean that person will die or will become permanently injured by that. So this is a subtlety that doesn't belong in statute, and I think this language just makes that more clear.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ablin.
Well, and I don't think anybody in this room would disagree about, you know, the life of the mother and so on, and even maybe beyond that as a consensus point. I just was curious, because this would disallow an elective abortion. I just was wondering, given the view that the majority has on this topic, that was actually limiting that. So if you think it does what you want, I think it would disallow elective abortions, which is the majority. So anyway, I'll just move on, Madam Chair. Can you go to page 217.24 and explain your born alive language? Please. I was not part of the debate. This is also a House-only provision. It's 217.24, I believe.
17.
It's recognition.
Yep.
And Madam Chair, you're well aware of this.
I know what it is. I just want to find it. So
page 217.
217. Yeah, so thank you for the question, Senator Abler. So as you see, we are repealing the so-called Born Alive statute. And we are repealing that because it is based on a fiction. The fiction that anybody is doing abortions and with pregnancies, later in pregnancies, and then that there are infants that are being born alive that are somehow then just being abandoned. That's just a fiction. It doesn't happen. And having that in statute, frankly, I believe that and many of the provisions in statute were put there over the years to chip away at abortion rights. To demonize doctors, to scare people, to make it, to put in an image in people's minds of something that never was the truth. And so that's why we need to repeal it. Now, in repealing it, I received a lot of, there was a lot of mismessaging, I would say. I think much of an intentional. We understand, everyone understands that people have feelings about abortion. Everyone does. And some people believe their feelings should dictate the actions of other people. And that is where I think many of us draw the line. But basically a lot of the messaging that was out there to sort of gin up outrage about repealing these statutes, people were being told that we were in favor of infanticide and ridiculous things like that. And that anybody was, waiting to the end of pregnancy and then saying, I don't want to give birth, give me an abortion. That just doesn't happen. And it's offensive. And so this language that I put in the bill is basically what we in the legislature call comfort language. And I want to be very clear because this has nothing to do with comforting infants. This is language that we often put in bills to simply state what is already law so that everyone can be clear about what is already law. And so that is what this language is intended to do. It simply states the obvious that any infant that is born alive is a person. Can anyone dispute that? No one would dispute that. And that they should be treated like any other patient and given appropriate care. Now, in some cases, that may be intervention to keep them alive. And in some cases, it may not. Because when someone gives birth to an infant that is going to live for a few minutes or a few hours, they may choose to hold their infant while that process happens and not to have extraordinary intervention. So that's what this language is intended to do. It's intended to just state the obvious, that physicians in this state, medical providers in the state, are under codes of medical ethics, and they operate ethically, and they don't need to be told when and how to intervene, that those should be private decisions. I think it's also very important to note what Senator Morrison referred to before, that all over the country now, we are seeing these restrictive laws play out. There was just an article in the New York Times about this very thing, where a family was denied an abortion for an infant, I think at 20 weeks, was diagnosed with a fatal, untreatable abnormality and forced to carry the pregnancy to term, because their doctors were afraid under the restrictive laws to give her an abortion. And she gave birth, and the infant struggled for breath and died very shortly thereafter. So these are horribly tragic situations where I believe, and many of my colleagues believe, that politicians don't need to be in the room to help make these decisions, and that barriers that we put in front of doctors to scare them, to make it difficult for them to practice, or that make it difficult for families or women or anyone who's pregnant to access abortion care, just leads to these situations. There are fine distinctions that need to be made, for sure. And people might make different decisions, but the people who make those decisions should always be the ones who are affected by it. Not you and me, because we are not in the room. We should not be in the room. And I do think that I would like to give my other colleagues here an opportunity, if I've said anything that's incorrect, I don't have this experience as a provider, and they do, and so I think it's, but I do have to say, though, as someone who represents a lot of physicians, it really infuriates me to see them demonized and to see the suggestion in law that people will do things that all of us would agree are just horrible. We don't need in law to say that you don't kill an infant that's alive, or that you don't just, this is just absolutely offensive. And so we're taking it out of law, and this language is just to say, of course an infant is a person. So I don't know, Senator Morrison, or I don't want to put you on the spot and make you answer for this all the time, but if you care to, please.
Madam Chair, I don't think I have a whole lot to add. The only thing I would add is the demonization of the people and the families who are going through an incredibly difficult, painful situation that can happen in this dialogue. So thank you for your comments, and I couldn't have said it better myself.
Madam Chair.
Senator Abler.
It's too bad we have to relitigate this topic by you sticking Senate File 70 into this bill. I might have voted for this. I've been the 35th vote a lot this year on things that were not too bad, that I could see benefit in, that I would try to encourage people to work across the aisle by modeling my own behavior. This is a full stop. And I'm disappointed that the work that you're so proud of with the child care and all the rest is marred by this. There has been enough abortion discussion this year in both bodies to take care of us for a decade. And Madam Chair, in Minnesota, there is no risk that things are going to change. You weren't at risk in the beginning with the Supreme Court, the way it's stacked up and all that in Minnesota. And to be sure about that, House File 1 passed, which more than assured that abortion was available up to the week before birth. And fine, okay, you win. You know, when they don't do it then, I hope. But they do it at 23, 24, 25 weeks, and that baby is viable. And so that's a debate that I wish we didn't have to have here. And the reason I bring this up is I don't know, my question really was, how do you define care? And in a world where we're looking at low values and people who need a lot of care, how about somebody with a disability that could live, but it might be a high value, it might be a low value proposition? You see how they begin to line up. And that's the concern I come, and I'm not belabor this. I'm trying to stay within your time frame. I think an hour and a half on this bill is a ridiculous low amount of time, but I could occupy this bill for 4 hours and ask you legitimate questions, which I'm not. I have a couple more, and then I appreciate the discussion. But some of this is so close to me. I believe that there's two patients, from the beginning till the end, and you and I do not agree on that, and perfect. But I'm just saying, all my presuppositions are the Hippocratic Oath that says, above all, do no harm to a person. And when are they legally a person, and when are they entitled to some care? When do they get anesthesia or not? All these questions that this bill brings up again, that it didn't have to. And if you want to pass Senate File 70, pass it as a standalone, let it come back with what's ever left, and then have it be there. But just a couple more questions, Madam Chair. Can you tell me why it was necessary to remove, I don't know what repealer it was exactly, the repealers were on 272. There's one that says birth is preferable to abortion. I believe that's being repealed. Can you tell me why it's necessary to expunge the statute of that sentence?
Well, Senator Abler, you may believe that this is, that we don't need to do this. I believe that we absolutely do. In other states, we are seeing that statutes that have been on the books since for a century are now being revived as reason to deny people their rights. And having old statutes on the books that are no longer applicable confuse people. And there has been confusion in this state about whether we had gestational limits for abortion, when in fact we really haven't for over 50 years. So, you know, I think it is necessary. I frankly think this is at least as important as the PRO Act, to actually repeal these statutes and get them off the books. So, sorry, we just disagree. I appreciate that you would like to vote for the bill and feel that you can't. And, you know, I appreciate that. That's kind of what happens around here a lot, right? We all vote for stuff. I will, you know, that honestly, there are things in this bill that I don't really want to vote for, but I'm going to. Because that's the way this process works. So if you don't mind, we are kind of running out of time.
Madam Chair,
and I do want to ask Representative Schumacher if he wants to make comments.
Madam Chair, I have two more
questions.
He doesn't.
Okay. So he's giving you his time, I guess. So Senator Abler.
Madam Chair, I'm not even going to go into why we only have an hour and a half with this. That is an inadequate amount of time. There's stuff in this bill that you don't even know is in there. I'm sure none of the conferees do. So I have got a finite card of questions, and I'm checking them off, and I'm down to two. One more on this topic and then one on a child care question, which is an easier one. I expressed in our committee my excitement about how well Positive Alternatives was working and how when it was passed, it was the great compromise, and it was a rickety one at best, safe, legal, and rare. We agreed on rare. And so the conversation has been, if you care about these kids, well, these pregnant moms, why don't you look after them? You know, like we just somehow didn't. Why, where's their programming and everything? And Madam Chair, this was the solution. And so a young mother comes along, married or otherwise, and they're pregnant and they're in distress, and they meet some people who help them through. They have the birth. They see them through. They befriend the family. And both the governor and the House decided to appeal it. I was so pleased and proud of the Senate for not doing it. I'm just extremely disappointed that that was something that was selected, as though this is somehow, you know, an unfair practice. And I'm not even going to ask you to comment because I know what you're going to say. And so let me ask my last question. If you care about this topic, Madam Chair, if you care about the women, if you care about the kids, this worked. And just because they don't want to offer a woman an abortion who doesn't want an abortion, now they're going to be barred. And that, to me, just is plain wrong. I have one more question, then I'm going to be done with my policy questions.
All right. I'm going to let Senator Morrison respond first, and then we'll do the last one. Senator
Morrison. Time limited.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make one comment and remind people that Minnesota is a very pro-pregnancy state. We've been an outlier for a long time in terms of offering medical assistance to pregnant people, including undocumented people, for a while. So we are very embracing of people who want to continue their pregnancies and very supportive and have been for a while.
All right, thank you. Senator Abler.
Madam Chair, these people that are doing positive, they don't care who you are. They don't care where you came from. This was a working thing. And because you have all the votes and you get to throw this in the dark, try to run this through the Senate in a daylight. And I promise you it'll be well debated and it might not even pass because we recognize the value. And everybody in the Senate doesn't think like that, that there's some people that, anyway, on a lighter note, Representative Pinto, I like the child care stuff. That's going to make a difference. You know, you've been fighting for this for a long time and now you got the money. Can you tell me what's in here for licensed homes, how they're going to benefit?
Representative Pinto, now I'm doing it too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a stickler about waiting to be, can we call them on? Senator Abel, I think you're asking about family child care.
Right.
And so, a variety of things. So I'm sure I'm going to forget some things. So first of all, the expansion of access regarding the child care assistance program. So, of course, family child care eligible for those increase in CCAP rates and the increase in funding through the basic sliding fee infusion for CCAP. So there's that piece. There are eligibility for recognition that the work done by our family child care providers and all child care providers is, in fact, a public good. So continued public support through the Great Start Compensation supports those monthly payments that you and I had started 2 years ago, and those continue. Family child care, I'm certainly eligible for that. Some specific pieces for family child care, the one-stop shop and sort of business supports for family child care. From that perspective, the continuous license, and I'm going to start losing maybe Senator Wicklund will be able to help me as well. But there are a number of things. Oh, the continuous license process for family child care providers, that's online 940. Of the spreadsheet, just a small thing to make things a little bit easier for our family child care providers. A reminder that there's a concern I know from all providers, but certainly family child care, about regulations. I feel like I've heard this from my GOP colleagues and from you, Senator Abler. And a reminder that there is right now the regulation modernization effort that's going on that is focused specifically on the family child care rules and regulations. And so that is something that we funded a couple years ago, and that ends up being advanced through this as well. So a wide variety of things, and I know that I'm probably forgetting more than I've even said, but there's a lot in there for family child care providers who are doing such critical work for our state.
Well, and thank you. And,
right, Senator Abel.
And Madam Chair, maybe Senator Wicklund can kind of comment on that on the floor. I know a lot of people have a question about that. Mm-hmm. So I'm out of questions except for a comment. Madam Chair, on this whole abortion thing, whenever I had a hand in it, I didn't attack Planned Parenthood. It was kind of a standoff. You leave that alone, leave this alone, and now the bets are off. But I never did that for something that I know is close to you and your heart and what you care about. And so I don't know where we've gone in this system. And I'm just leaving it at that. But I'm just crushed inside about these people that have gone out of their way, and now they have to go have bake sales to try to serve these same people because they wouldn't use the word abortion in a sentence. against their own beliefs. We have a section of the Minnesota Constitution where people don't have to violate their own beliefs. In the contraceptive stuff here, we have referenced that so that Catholic hospitals don't have to do this contraceptive. We discussed it. That's in here because we notice that and we care, because people get to have their faith, they get to have their beliefs. And thank you, Madam Chair.
So before we finish here, I'd just like to see if any other members of the conference committee would like to make any further comments. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had failed at the beginning to thank staff. I know a number of folks had, I'm really grateful to each and every one of you. I know how hard this process has been, and so many thanks. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Chair Wicklund?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to say also thank you to staff, all of our nonpartisan staff, our House and Senate partisan staff. Thank you for all of the countless number of hours this has taken since January to work on this bill and come together and create this final product that I am really proud of and really pleased to be able to present. And Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to adopt the conference report and the accompanying spreadsheet.
Madam Chair.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Wicklund, Senator Abler.
I have a question on the spreadsheet, just one question that we did not.
Well, you know what, Senator Abler, a motion has been made.
Well, Madam Chair, then I have an amendment to the motion.
Okay.
And if I can ask my question, then I will. I'd like to move that contingent appropriation on line 718 be moved as a one-time payment to hospitals.
So, you know what, Senator Abler, actually, your motion, I think, is out of order at this point because the other motion is on the floor.
It's an amendment to the motion.
And so that's not an amendment to the motion. So,
Madam Chair, it absolutely is.
Well.
And I'd ask for a roll call.
Well.
Is the Senate Council able to tell us if you can amend a motion in this way?
Yeah, could we get the one?
Ms. Stengel, I don't know.
All right, well, all right, you know what? Pardon?
She said one moment.
All right, you know what? We can just take a vote on the motion. So could you restate your amendment to the motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm moving that the unallocated money on the continued appropriation of $22 million on line 718. The hospital rebasing number is zero, but it would go into a line as a one-time payment to hospitals.
So, okay, so that is the motion before us. Let me just, I would just comment that if we change a spreadsheet today, we won't have a bill. So just with that in mind, the clerk will take the roll on the amendment to the motion.
Chair Wicklund?
No.
Senator Abler?
Yes.
Senator Bolden?
No.
Senator Kupak?
No.
Senator Morrison?
No.
Chair Liebling?
No.
Representative Bierman?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Pinto?
No.
Representative Schumacher?
Aye.
There being eight noes and two ayes, the motion does not prevail, and the amendment to the amendment is not adopted. So,
Madam Chair.
Recurring on the amendment on the main motion,
Madam Chair.
To adopt
the conference report and the accompanying spreadsheet.
Madam Chair.
And the roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call.
Madam Chair.
So the clerk will
I have
take
another motion to make, Madam Chair.
The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Wicklund.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
Senator Abler.
Are you kidding me? No.
Senator Bolden.
Aye.
Senator Kupak.
Aye.
Senator Morrison.
Aye.
Chair Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Schumacher?
No.
There being eight ayes and two nays, the motion prevails, and the conference committee report with the accompanying spreadsheet is adopted. And with that, there being no further business before the conference committee at this time, we are adjourned.